Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. You've done it all. You've walked the tightrope of success and accomplished so much in your career. Now what? How do you keep redefining your success and expanding your emotional well-being? Join us to hear talk on mindset, motivation, and your growth in handling the challenges you've experienced both in circumstances and with yourself as a leader. Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders with your host, Tracy Crossley.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. And today I have with me another wonderful guest. She's a leader, and we will be talking about exactly in what and all of that. And her name is Laura Barnard.
Nailed it, Tracy. You'd be surprised. Like your last name, how many people might mispronounce it, but my family will be so happy.
That's a good thing. I actually, my maiden name was Rebun, okay? R-E-B-B-U-N.
Okay.
Never in a million years did anybody ever get it right.
Oh, well, yeah. It's like an insider tip. If they get it right, they know you. It's a good filter.
Yeah, I guess. Maybe some of those people still didn't know my last name. Anyway. All right. So you guys that are listening, let me tell you a little bit about Laura and then we'll get started with our conversation. So she has founded Breakthrough Brands to empower women and her LGBTQ plus community to break barriers and close gender gaps in leadership. As a former Division I athlete, she's experienced the power of teamwork and she brings energy, openness, and perseverance to collaborative environments while motivating others to self-actualize into clear and confident leaders. While previously leading strategy for iconic global brands such as Haribo, it is Haribo, right? That's how you say it?
It is, yes.
Okay. Werther's and Skittles, Barnard understands the role bold brands play in creating external impact. Her background in psychology from Harvard University and an MBA in marketing and strategic management from the University of Chicago have informed her belief that great brands start with great leadership. Barnard is securing a more equitable world for those around her, one where her wife, Lindsay Gaskins, and she's your partner, right?
Yes.
In the business.
Okay. Yeah, she's my boss, which is, we'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Okay. Their three daughters and powerful women like them are empowered to lead the way. I love, love everything. By the way, what was the sport that you were Division I in?
Basketball.
Okay. Okay. Are you tall, by the way?
I'm 5'10". I think I used to be tall and now I'm shrinking, but at my height, my peak, I was 5'10".
Okay. Okay. That's still pretty. Yeah. That's still pretty. I'm only barely 5'5". So
So yeah, so, I guess you could say I'm tall.
Yeah. Yes. Well, because whenever you say basketball, okay. So just for some context here, my husband's 6'7".
Whoa.
Totally sucks at basketball.
Oh, really? Yeah. But everybody gets asked all the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, his younger brother's 6'7", and he was really good at basketball. So yeah, he got a scholarship for it. But but it's just funny because there's always the assumption, well, you're tall.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So anyway, okay. So tell me then, as a child, I'm guessing you loved to play sports. Like, was that your dream when you were a kid that you were going to grow up and you were going to be a basketball player? Like, what were you thinking when you were growing up?
Yeah. So you pretty much nailed it. I grew up in the age of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, you know, being a kid from the Chicago area. The whole Be Like Mike thing really just seeped into my whole being. So I grew up thinking that I would, you know, someday become a professional athlete for sure. But I was, as a kid, which I think I see now as a parent, way back then, I'll say you could be a multi-sport athlete. And that was totally acceptable. And, you know, trying a bunch of different sports. So I didn't know which sport it would be, but I played a lot of sports and thought someday that was the logical progression.
So when it comes to playing sports as a kid, was it just, you know, because for some of us, like I was a tomboy when I was a kid. Right. And so I was drawn to all sorts of things that were, you know, like me and my tetherball or whatever. I played baseball, I played volleyball, I played those things. No, seriously, I had a tetherball. Yes.
It's like a cat just batting that thing around.
I did. It was in a cement wheel. The cement of the pole in the wheel.
You don't see those very much anymore. Just bring them back.
You know what? I want to.
Maybe after this interview, we can talk about that.
Seriously, I think that they should put them in offices. Wouldn't that be like a great like stress reliever?
Get some of the aggression out. Exactly. Just round it around. Just keep it going. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that would be awesome. So, you know, would you say as an athlete that it makes you more competitive, or is it just the fun of the sport? Like, what was the driver for you?
Yeah. So, you know, the initial attraction to sports, I think, was just pure fun and play and just, you know, being a kid, so to speak. And I think I had a very strong competitive spirit. I still do. And this idea that, you know, I get home from school, throw my book bag down and just run across the street to the field where whatever sport was being played, sounds like you, I would jump in the game. And often I was, you know, as good as or better than all the boys that were out there. I was typically the only girl on that field. And I think as I got better and, you know, got skills developed and confidence and that self-esteem that comes through sports, I was lucky enough to kind of keep in that realm and keep playing. I never really got out of it. I stayed in it. And then so many girls drop out of sports, you know, in the adolescent ages where boys kind of stay in there longer. And I feel like I stayed in the game because of that competitive spirit, but then also, for me, the magic was in the teams and just kind of finding interactions and communication and working together towards a common goal, you know, once we started playing more seriously. But in the beauty of it, as just a kid, it was pure fun and a way to sort of, you know, exercise my skills and my confidence.
And that brings me to the question of, as a kid, did you feel like you had leadership abilities? Like, were you always taking the lead? Did you, you know, like, how were you when you were younger?
Yeah. So I was youngest of three, so two older brothers. So I was always trying to kind of keep up with them. And if they were, you know, not doing great in school, I would try to do really good in school just to, and again, back to the kind of competition. So I grew up with the example of very strong women leaders in my family. So my mom, my grandmothers, I had really good positive role models, and none of them were business leaders, so to speak, but they were leaders within the family. And I look back to that as really informing the type of leader that I am and the context that I lead best in. So it's all about, you know, knowing your role, being a good communicator, connecting with others, enabling, empowering, influencing others, not the dictator or the, you know, the person at the podium kind of telling what to do, but more of an inclusive way of leading and in different contexts of leading, not just a traditional, you know, business or sports world. So I think back to a little bit of, you know, I think there's some natural leadership ability in there, but those examples, and I think sports is a great classroom for leadership development too. As you learn and grow the roles that you play on a team, you might be the superstar, you might be the last kid off the bench, but knowing how you fit in and how you work together towards a common goal, and really the role of leadership in that setting is such a great place to practice it. So I had some natural inkling and some just, again, that competitive spirit of trying to be better than, you know, these two big brothers, but it was honed and developed really through sports over time.
Yeah, I think sports can be a great discipline and you know, yeah, and can provide also what teamwork looks like and
exactly,
you know, so on and so forth.
You can't do it alone, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing, right?
Unless you're tetherball, just master like you are. So I don't know. You can do that. Oh. But I maybe,
yeah,
it's tetherball teams. Maybe it's team sport. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I did play softball all the way through junior high. And but one of the things this just made me think about when I was coaching and managing my daughters in junior high school and the citywide league for softball. And it's just an interesting, and I don't know if you've come across this or not, because I don't know if you're doing anything along those lines anymore, but it wasn't so much the girls, because we would get them doing things like breathing through their eyelids, like, you know, Bull Durham, the whole you breathe through your eyelids, right? Like, we had the last place team. Yeah, no, we got to like first place, but my whole point in bringing it up was, it was interesting how many of the men that were, you know, the dads and the fans, would tell their daughters, no, don't listen to her. Like, I'm their manager. Don't listen to her. Yeah. Listen to me. Right. Yeah. And that's where I'm like, they need to just keep parents.
Yeah. If those situations happen to me, I kind of lose my mind. So I definitely kind of coming full circle. My wife and I both coach our daughters in various sports, basketball, soccer. And it's gotten a lot better when you show up to that, coach's orientation meeting. And so it's all the dads, right? Or all the male caregivers, right? And very few women, but there are more women showing up to coach. And women, I think, coach differently than men. I think the athletes, especially young female athletes, may respond more positively to female role models in that way. So I'm a big proponent of more women in coaching, more women in reffing, more women as those visible role models, especially for those young women and girls. It makes such a difference. And not to say I had great male coaches my whole life. My first female coach was only until I got to college that I had any female coach throughout any of my sports. So that was kind of a shocker to me, but a really positive example. Again, another great role model for me in leadership to see that person at that high level. But I'm a huge proponent of women coaching for sure.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to it. I actually interviewed somebody on this show. I don't think her interview's out yet, but she coaches the Navy. I think it's the Navy male rugby team.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I think she's the first female coach. Cool. And yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it is. I think it's great. I think it's great because I feel like women bring something different. Like if you read recently, they were talking about how female astronauts are actually, I don't want to say better than male, but they're different than male.
They're in safe places. Yeah, yeah. there's different qualities, skill sets that in certain environments are better. I think, men and women leading together ideally is the perfect outcome, but there's definitely some traits and skill sets that women bring to certain situations that produce better results for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. So in your own career trajectory.
Yes.
Where have you found challenges with either being a leader or having somebody who's a leader and you're not really jiving with them? Like, what are some of the things that you've traveled through?
Yeah. Just kind of always kind of harken back to that playing field as a kid where I had this naive perception of it being a level playing field that I could go out there, compete, win, get picked first, play with the boys, right? So to speak. Yeah. And that's what I would do every day for about the first 18 years of my life. When I entered corporate America, I very quickly realized that was not the case. It is not a level playing field for women. And interestingly, the higher up you go, again, the naive person in me, you would assume maybe it gets better the higher up I go, and it actually got worse. So I look back, as I got, as an entry level marketing manager, early in my career, looking for those role models, those examples of women to say, okay, who's out there in this organization leading? I'm a big, learn by watching and kind of that I'm a very coachable person, right? Who's out there that can be my mentor, can help me, learn and develop. And there just weren't a lot of examples. So I was always seeking out, those examples of strong women leaders within the teams and organizations that I was a part of. And they're hard to find. There's a handful of them and they still stand out of my mind, but it's tough to find those role models just by the stats, right? So it's 10% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women. So, and it's not any better at the C level, right? A little bit better, I should say. So I was kind of like in the spirit of looking for those role models and kind of emulating them, learning from them, hopefully developing some sort of mentor relationship. In the absence of that, you find peers who are like-minded, who are maybe one level above or at your level, who can kind of help coach and guide you. So I look to my peers often to kind of help me get better, develop, ask them questions when I didn't have that, role model as a leader I could go to for help. So I've had to kind of navigate situations where, you look up the chain and you don't see anyone that you're like really aspiring to be. That's problematic. Yeah. And that really for me was I won't say the reason, but definitely contributed to the reason why I was, had career discernment and was trying to figure out what companies I could go to where I could be surrounded by more like-minded leaders, not just female leaders, but just, values and mission and purpose aligned leaders. So moving in my career was often to find that relationship with the leader that I was going to align with. And I had great male leaders. And if I look back who were purpose-driven, mission-driven, values-aligned, and I had some not-so-great leaders, and I was really, kind of using, walking away from situations when it wasn't a positive culture that they were creating.
That's awesome.
You want to hold them, when to fold them, right? I was like, I'm going to, I brag about the fact that I quit 7 jobs because I was always trying to advance and evolve and get to those places with a strong leader and a strong culture.
Okay. That takes a lot of courage, because most people will hang out and it will be the dysfunctional relationship of their life.
Totally. Yep.
So what was it for you that was like, you know what? I'm not doing this.
Yeah. If I go back to each of, my decisions to leave companies, usually for a host of, a host of good reasons, I hope, but it was always, in the spirit of, adding the most value to an organization, being valued, advancing my career, trying to do some good by other people, right? And trying to find that cultural fit. And the culture kind of really is informed by the leader. So trying to find that perfect combination of, where am I valued? Where can I add value? Where is there that mission-driven leader promoting a culture that I want to be a part of, that's inclusive, that's, equitable, all those good things. So it's a complex, decision-making matrix, I'll say, but once you kind of get clear on what you're looking for, you find it in the workplace or in the set of options, or you create it for yourself. And that's ultimately what I did with Breakthrough after, being in, I'll say, corporate America for, almost 20 years, 16, 17 years, and figuring out, okay, where does this exist? And it was elusive, and it was something that I wanted to create, for myself and now for our team.
I can understand that. And again, that takes a lot of courage too. So at any point in time, whether it was leaving a job or even starting your own business, where was fear? Was fear apparent? Was fear like, okay, screw it, I'm putting that to the side, I'm on a mission? Like, what was your mindset?
Yes. Good question. I think the fear, there's always a fear of failure. Like if I quit this job, am I a failure? And kind of reframing and redirecting that narrative to say, okay, I'm leaving this job, but I'm, moving onto this opportunity at this next thing. That is an evolution. And you think about, the arc or of your story, and it's not a perfect line, right? It's more of a winding spaghetti string of these marker moments in your journey, and some are up and some are down, but hopefully there's a best fitting trend line through them. That's, leading you to a better future. And that's where, understanding. And for me, it's like how you rationalize and talk about to yourself about these things. Was that a failed opportunity, or did that lead me to the next thing that was newer, bigger, better, more empowering, fill in the blank. So I look back and the decisions I made to leave were hopefully in the progression of my career, leading me to a more evolved place. But the fear of failure or being perceived as a failure is a real one. And kind of that negative self-talk or that self-doubt that creeps in is am I making the right decision? And, you got to sometimes take that leap and live with the consequences of it. But, for someone it was so goal and achievement oriented and don't want to be perceived as anything but perfect, right? When you make these decisions that from the outside may look like, hey, what's this person doing? That seems like a left turn, right? Out of nowhere. You have to kind of mitigate that, but it starts with the narrative that you tell to yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think that when it comes to failure, it's a different definition for everybody. Like I used to feel like, oh, failure. But when you really look at it, there isn't failure. There's a lesson, right? There's something you learn. I mean, if you're open to learning, because to me, failure would mean you fell on the ground and you can't get up ever.
Yeah. Right. And I was just listening to, it was a Brené Brown podcast, and I think Dr. Sarah Lewis of Harvard was featured. And she, the word failure is kind of a weird word in our language. It comes from the banking industry when there was no life after the crisis financially of a company, and it's really implies an end, and that's not an accurate description, because a failed opportunity is always an evolution. It's a clean page to something else that's going to happen. So your ultimate failure is death, right? What you can't go is it, but everything else is something that's we can evolve and learn from, and it always leads to new opportunity. I look back all those points where I left roles, it was for new opportunities for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's all a metamorphosis, right? It's kind of like, I think we spend a lot of time in a cocoon, and then we end up being the butterfly, and then maybe we get back in the cocoon again. I don't know that works in nature, but
I was working on, some scientists is going to start working on this.
Yeah, pretty much. Anybody listening who's a scientist. Yeah.
Get those butterflies back in the cocoons.
Oh my God. So, I mean, but in reality, we do. We just metamorphose, I think, at different levels of our own awareness.
Exactly.
Knowing ourselves, understanding more of what we want. Because the other thing is, I think that a lot of women, you know, will go into corporate and they'll have the dreams, kind of like what you were talking about, you know, kind of being naive and, okay, I'm going to get to the top and then it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Except you don't realize all the expectations that are on you,
right,
plus the expectations that aren't on, let's say, a male counterpart.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it is the internal and external barriers facing women are very significant. And that's part of, you know, with the company, the name Breakthrough is really, it's like breaking through the internal barriers, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, negative self-talk, our own, you know, insidious biases against things. And then the external barriers that are significant and persistent, and all the way from, you know, misogyny to discrimination to cultural policies, whatever it is, there's a lot of those barriers, and you're not really equipped to navigate them as a young, you know, young professional. I'll say, you kind of go into it thinking, if I work hard and do my job, that I'm going to get promoted and people will see me and you know, they'll value me. And it doesn't work that way. And that's where I think the work that we do is really focused on getting those internal barriers broken through, and then ultimately helping people be externally clear and confident to speak up, speak out, you know, be bold, and hopefully develop and retain and elevate their leadership to not just stay in the game, but to be the leaders of these organizations.
I love that, because you know what? It's really needed. It's like the work that I do, I'm actually going to create a nonprofit. Well, I put into create a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I want to do with it is offer it to junior high school students, because I feel like, you know, that's such a crucial time of your self-worth, you know, of creating self-worth, right?
Yeah.
And not having it depend on external influences, because, you know, that's such a crucial period when you're in development, you know? And so I think anything that helps to inform people that are going into whatever it is, whether it's your own business or corporate, and it's to know you got to believe in you.
Yes.
And you can't really depend on what's outside of you to provide that for you, because that's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, and of course, because I mean, I look back on my own career and I was definitely very naive too. I just thought I could just break down doors and get what I wanted.
Yeah.
Only find that I couldn't. And I think a lot of women find that. I was interviewing somebody recently who's in the C-suite, and she was saying, I don't know where I'm going to go from here, because, you know, it's like a maybe 18-month, 2-year tenure. And then what, right? Okay. What do I do with myself? You don't hear men saying that.
Right.
So, So, you know, it's really, I believe that most women, I don't want to say everybody quit your job and have your own business, but I believe that on some level, that's how things will change.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, and so many, you know, the language around, like, you know, being at quote unquote an inflection point or what's next in my career. I think just, you know, anecdotally now doing this business for 4 years, 200, 300 women that we work with, the themes are very consistent of what they're seeking. And I don't hear that as much from male leaders. They don't use that terminology about being an inflection point or trying to figure out what's next. Like it's a different vernacular almost. And it's so we're trying to just help navigate those situations and say, okay, it's not everybody should start a business, but some that could be a pathway that's relevant based on your intended impact and your skill set and what makes you uniquely you as a leader. But there are also maybe other pathways. It may be, you know, board roles or, you know, nonprofit participation or leadership, getting thought leadership articles out there and just kind of putting yourself out there in different pathways. That's not just like the box that you're in for your role and thinking that if I stay at this company for, you know, 20 years, they're going to see me. And you have to be proactive about it, be intentional and have a plan, and also just kind of have discernment on what those pathways can be. And then position your brand per that pathway and go after it in this one life we have to live, right? We got to go after it. So
I absolutely agree. So when women come to you, are they usually just starting businesses? Have they been in business a while? Like, tell me a little bit about, you know, for the women listening who might have an interest in talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've, so thank you for asking. We've had, you know, in the years now we've kind of developed some of these personas or these profiles of, you know, who are we best suited to work with? And there's four or five that are really emerging as most salient. One is the emerging leader, kind of new to a role, you know, ready to kind of establish her brand within the organization as, you know, that CMO or that kind of senior executive. So that emerging leader within an organization. We would be thinking about thought leaders who are kind of already established in the role and are looking to kind of develop their brand platform through more content. So these are people who are, you know, looking to write a book or have a personal website or kind of put more thought leadership out there. Impact seeker. So someone who may say, I would have put myself in that boat, you know, 5 years ago. I have this skill set in branding and marketing. I've been in the industry for almost 20 years, but I'm sort of a lost soul. I don't know where to apply this skill set. I don't want to sell Skittles anymore, right? I want to apply this towards something I care about. So going from goal-driven to more purpose-driven. So those impact seekers, we kind of help them navigate what's next in these inflection points. Founders are very much a good fit as a, you know, the founder's story, kind of helping them get clear on how they communicate what they've done, what they're doing next, you know, how to work with them. And then we think about career transitioners, right? If you're trying to transition, if you're looking for a job or thinking of need to be looking for a job, how do you talk about your accomplishments? Not as a laundry list of, you know, bullet points of my resume, but more about capabilities, more about the narrative. What, you know, what are you known for? What do you want to stand for? And kind of honing your main messages so that you can put it out to the world of, you know, what you want that opportunity to be. So those are kind of thing about new leaders at one end of the spectrum, very established leaders on the other, and then these transitioners in the middle. Those are the personas typically that we best work with.
Okay. So then my next question is, can you give me an example of someone you've worked with? I know that you have, you know, these four or five different personas, but, you know, like, tell me a story about somebody whose success, you know, they've been successful or that you've seen them through and now they're on a totally different trajectory. Like, is there anything
you can share? So kind of talk about your butterfly, the metamorphosis here, but a lot of good change, but I'll keep them anonymous just because some of the work obviously is confidential, but we'll take a profile of a leader who we work with, who was in the higher education space, chief level officer, kind of an administrative perspective in a higher ed institution, right? And trying to pivot out of that into more of a corporate role around sustainability. So pretty big gap, like higher ed marketing to corporate, you know, sustainability, and that there's a pretty cavernous gap in between. But the skill sets that she had developed, how she talked about her capabilities, the work that she did outside of her day job, so to speak, within this, you know, corporate sustainability space that would parlay over into the new role, her network connections from the alumni base that are very strong into the corporate role. So try to map everything, like who she is, strengths, talents, abilities, skill sets, capabilities, network, and bridge that gap right into this viability as a candidate in the corporate world. So it's a pretty big leap to make, but you know, long story short, had multiple options to choose from and is in a very senior, great role for a very much purpose, mission-driven company that absolutely sees value in that diverse skill set that she brought in, but the bridges there were enough. So just, it's about really translating experiences and skill sets and then really getting people to be clear on, okay, what's possible? How do I connect into this industry and make that jump and position themselves for that role?
I love that. I think that's great. I mean, that's such a great example too, because I wouldn't have, from what you said, I wouldn't have seen that capability because there's so, I don't know if it's just, again, women, but I always find that there's just so many women, you know, we have so many skills, so many talents, right? And it is about being honest with yourself about what lights you up, you know, what is purpose-driven work. And I think, you know, that's meaningful to you. And I think we have a lot of stumbling blocks because we're still trying to compete and to get to, you know, that career trajectory that maybe somebody else mapped out for us, or we think that we'll be validated in some way. But, you know, I really think it's about finding what's meaningful, because to me, that's sustainable.
Exactly. Yep. And this idea, like we have this lovely Venn diagram that I love, but bringing who you are as a leader fully into what you do. So who you are, strengths, talents, abilities, who you are at your core, purpose, mission, vision, values. If you can bring that into what you do every day. So not just your job, right? But your words, decisions, your actions, kind of your how you're showing up for others. like that's really where the magic, the breakthrough happens, right? And that's where we want to guide people towards and being proactive and intentional about that, not just taking that next job or applying for that job because that's what you quote unquote should do, but really trying to self-actualize and find your full potential in those places where you can really bring who you are into what you're doing every day. And that's where I feel like I'm a living, you know, living proof of that. Like, but it took me creating it to be able to fully bring my whole host of those things to bear in a professional setting.
I love that. I was, I have another podcast in case you listeners don't know that too, but I do. It's been around for a long time. It's kind of over 700 episodes.
Oh, nice.
Yes. We'll tell you about how
tell
much.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I know. Right. It's called Freedom from Attachment.
And, oh, there you go. Okay. Sign me up.
Okay. There we go. And I do have an interview series in there. It's called Moving On. Yeah. And I interviewed this woman like a few weeks ago. Her episode's not out yet. She's 82 years old and she's a coach. And what was interesting, it basically just piggybacks on what you just said. You know, she said, until I embraced every part of me.
Yep.
And she goes, and that was just recently. So she's in her 80s.
Yeah.
Figuring this out, right?
Right.
I mean, it's great.
It's never too late.
I know.
I wish I had figured this out 20 years ago instead of in my 40s, but it is better late than never. But it's such a critical, it was a light bulb for me. And I think for in the work that we do, you know, it's brand strategy, but it's also ultimately coaching people towards that place or towards those options for them to make the choices about, you know, those opportunities that they can really do that. Cause it's hard. It's much easier when you find those places. Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah.
People have a problem with, I might be judged. Right. What if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
What if I just think this is my area of genius or, you know, and what if I fail? Right. So all of these things are always, I think, in there. And I was like, okay, you're 82. And I was just I'm redesigning my whole business right now or have been in the process of doing it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to be 82 when I do it.
No, I'm doing it now.
I think there's different iterations. Like if I look at myself at different ages, right. Mm-hmm. You look at here I am, this is how I am. And you think you're being authentic. You think you're being as real as you can be. Mm-hmm. And you don't know that you're not really seeing yourself as clearly as possible. Yeah. And I think that that's a lot of it is coming to being self-aware enough
to
take yourself out of the, let's say, robotic way that most of us are, where we get up to the same thing every day, and to be able to see yourself and go, okay, I can have a different life. I can have the life that I'm really born to have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, love that. So great.
Love it. All right, cool. So two things, and then we'll wrap it up. One is, I would love to hear if you have a special tip or something that you can leave the audience with. And then the other is where to find you.
Okay. A simple framework for leadership that we coach our clients in through our workshops towards is this idea of being a bold leader. And bold is an acronym that will be hopefully easy to remember, but it means being brave, being outspoken, being lucid, and being distinct. And this is about the journey here, being internally really clear and having internal fortitude first, and then flipping the switch to being externally clear and distinct with your story, your messaging, et cetera. So the bold acronym is something to take home and continue to work on. And am I being brave? Am I willing to be outspoken? Am I lucid and clear? Am I distinctly telling my story? And in my bold framework, second question is where to find me.
Yeah.
You can read more about the Bold Framework and about our team and our mission to advance women in leadership at breakthroughbrands.com. So www.breakthrough is BREAKTHRUbrands.com. Or find me on LinkedIn. Happy to connect and connect to women leaders out there or folks in a position to empower women leaders. We're here as a resource and we are just getting started in many ways. So
I love that. And I've really enjoyed our conversation. And I hope everybody listening feels the same, because I think this has just been chock full of great information, especially if you're sitting on the fence or you feel like you're not even sure what is going on for you, you know, because a lot of times we don't know at first. We're just uncomfortable with circumstances maybe we've had for a long time and we just don't know what that means. So I think you've given a lot of insight for those of you that are in that position and others too. I think that this is great. So thank you
for giving this conversation the space here, and I appreciate you, what you do, Tracy, as well.
Well, thank you, Laura. And thank you, audience, for listening. And you've heard where to find Laura, and you know where to find me if you have any questions about this episode. Take care, everybody, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today. For more information on Tracy and her programs and to set up a discovery session, email business@tracycrossley.com. That's business@tracycrossley.com, and go to tracycrossley.com to get your free download entitled Stop Your Inner Dictator. Thank you for tuning in to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders.